This is WGTDHD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Guida Brown, former executive director of the Hope Council, Dr. Steve Brown, retired professor of educational leadership and school law, Dr. Karen Sconsert, chair of the education department and associate professor at Carthage College, Dr. Jonathan Shaler, professor of communications at UW-Parkside, and Stephanie Skilba, Vice President for Community and Government Relations at Gateway Technical College. And now, here's today's moderator for Education Matters.
And good morning, everyone, and welcome to Education Matters here on WGTD Public Radio. And we serve all of southeastern Wisconsin and northeastern Illinois. And I'm very pleased to have as my guest this morning on Education Matters, and we're taping this a few weeks before this will air, is Kathy Garver. And the music that you hear, and the theme song for the TV program, A Family Affair. Kathy, thank you so much for joining us on Education Matters.
My pleasure, Steve. Always a pleasure, and education does matter a lot to me.
It does, you know what, and we're going to talk about that. You know, I had someone ask me, why are you interviewing Kathy Garver for Education Matters? Because we have other programs on WGTD, and we'll get into that. By the way, when you hear that theme music for Family Affair, and the opening with the color and the bursting stars, I'll call it. What kind of thoughts go through your mind?
Well, it's exciting to me, and I love the theme. It was written by Duvall, who was an award-winning composer, and he composed also the theme song for My Three Sons and many others. And it always reminds me with the kaleidoscope at going around in the vivid colors that what the producers were trying to say was, hello, this show is in color. One of the very firsts back in 1966, which was actually in color. I have heard, though, when people hear that theme, they can't get it out of their heads. One of those little worms gets in there and just won't get out. But it was a very fun theme.
Let's talk a bit about your life in Hollywood and what led up to Family Affair. And I'm going to count from 7, 8, 9, 10. As in the Ten Commandments. Tell us a bit about that experience, because, you know, a lot of people don't know or just don't realize that you were in that incredible motion picture.
It was one of my very first movies, and I had done, right before that, The Night of the Hunter, which was also an excellent film, totally different. I mean, I went from horror to holy, because Night of the Hunter is regarded as one of the best horror films ever made, and one of the psychological kinds of horror films. And there I was walking on to the set at Paramount, and I was just hired as an extra. Well, I was like about 7, 8 years old. I didn't even know what that was. And I was ushered off to the wardrobe room and the makeup room. And so I had these sponges. I remember the sense of the sponge being dipped in cold water and applied to my skin, my arms, so I would look more like the slave I was to play. And then donning these kind of gritty striped costumes. And then I go onto the set. And I was to be in part of the Exodus, and I was to sit on a wool wagon holding a lamb in my arms as we got out of town, so to speak. So We're all set on the set going down this dirt path. And all of a sudden, I heard this big voice cry out. I said, "Don't let that little girl's face get in the camera." I said, "Who is that?" And it was kind of scary. It was coming from above. And I said, "Ooh, is that God?" We were doing the Ten Commandments, and I was eight. But it wasn't God, but a very cinematic deity. That was Cecil B. DeMille. Mm-hmm. So the associate producer came over, and he kind of covered me halfway, so you really couldn't identify me. But I did that scene. Afterwards, he lifted me off the wagon, and that voice that was way up high was actually attached to a body who was sitting on a crane. And it came down, and that was the great Cecil B. DeMille. So he walked over to me, and we started chatting, and he said, "Do you like it?" "Oh, yes, this is so much fun," and blah, blah. And so then he left, and then the associate producer said to my mother, "Well, I think she's going to be on the movie a lot longer," which meant that Cecil B. DeMille wrote scenes specifically for me in the movie with Charlton Heston.
As you look back at that experience, that motion picture, which I believe was 1956, I believe, or am I right?
55.
I mean, I've seen it probably seven or eight times. As you look back at that experience and working with and being around people like Charlton Heston, Cecil B. DeMille, and you look at Hollywood today, and this may be a little off topic, but oh well. How do you compare what Hollywood and the entertainment business was like back in the 1950s compared to now? Here it is, the year 2022. You're still doing commercials, you're doing films, you're doing all kinds of things. How do you compare the two?
Well, it certainly has changed. Of course, in the 50s, they were still in the studio aspect, and they would get their new and upcoming actors, and they would sign them to contracts, and they were treated differently. And in some aspects, as a child, and my friend Paul Peterson has written about this for a minor consideration, and I wrote one of my books is Ex-Child Stars, and they didn't have all the rules for the children at that time. So, but they were still taken care of, and the moms were always there taking care of them. So there was a whole different realm, and actors didn't become producers. Actors weren't producers at that time. They were just actors, and it was led, you know, by Sam Goldwyn or a lot of the movie moguls at that time, who really ran the business. Now, and for television, I mean, there were like three channels, CBS, NBC, ABC, and everybody watched those three channels. Now, fast forward, and here we are, 2022, there are 930 different places that one could go to see whatever they would like to do. But in one aspect, like for Family Affair, and my three sons, and unfortunately, because Tony just died, Leave It to Beaver,
right.
TV shows became classics because everybody watched them. Now, if you're watching a Roku or a Tubi or, you know, Amazon or any of the Network Plus streaming shows, you get a million people, and hope people are thrilled. You know, that they have a million viewers or 800,000. Well, everybody watched it. NBC, ABC, and CBS, when they were on because of the networks. And that's why I think that they are remembered and remembered fondly.
Sure. And, you know, as you know, I've worked in the past with both Paul Peterson and with the late Tony Dow, who just passed away. You know, I wanted to read your book, and I'll tie this all together. Your book, Surviving Sissy, My Family Affair of Life in Hollywood. the foreword to your book was written by Patty Duke, who passed away a few years ago. And I just want to read this. And she said, in reading your book, it's not surprising that we had so much in common as child actors. I confess here that I always envied how pretty you were in Family Affair. You've proved then and since your talent and skills as an actress. Kathy, dear, you took my breath away several times as I read of the life challenges you faced. You inspire me to rededicate myself to my career and use my imagination, as you have done, to remain vital to your career and, most importantly, in your life and family. That foreword is so powerful. It's brief, but it is so powerful. When you first read that, what kind of thoughts did you have?
I thought I should have asked her to make it longer. Because I said, Patty, you don't have to make, you know, a great big long forward, you know, just a couple sentences. But I must say that she packed a lot into those sentences. And she became my friend when we were like 18. We were the same age. I was maybe 5 months, a little bit older. That's it. When she was doing the Patty Duke show, and I played her friend Monica. And then I was honored to do an audio book recording of In the Presence of Greatness, which was a compilation of interviews that the author, Mr. Jankowski, had put together. So when I'm doing the audio book, it's like Patty was just right there. I was talking with a friend of mine yesterday, and also my son yesterday, about how the body to me, even we're made up of electrodes, and there's a lot of electricity. And sometimes those bursts of energy, you know, just go through the another perhaps dimension, or you're just feeling them. But as I was reading the book, I felt she was right there. And my voice, which I had, you know, started out to imitate somewhat, was just like there all of a sudden. It was like I was Patty actually reading the book, and especially in the passages where she's in quotes and talking about what happened to her in her life.
Sure. And we'll talk a bit about your work with audiobooks in a little while. Let's talk a bit about Family Affair in terms of how that came about. And you were acting in films and other venues, if you will. But you were, I believe, in your third year at UCLA when that telephone call came. And by the way, we're going to relate this to education, in that here you are getting your I believe you were just starting your junior year. You were majoring in speech at the time. If you could just talk about what happened when that phone call came. And
yes, because I was at my sorority house. I was a Pi Phi, and I had started out at UCLA at, I was 17 and didn't know what I wanted, and started in anthropology and then switched to speech, and now, which is communications at UCLA. But I was still working alongside, even though I was going to school, and that I did the Patty Duke show while I was still there, and the Rifleman and other shows that were going on. But and I still had my childhood agent, Hazel McMillan, and she called me. And I answered the phone at the sorority, and she says, Kathy, I have an interview for you, but it's this afternoon. You have to be in Hollywood at 3 o'clock, and it's for a series, and the series already been sold, but they just need one more character. Now, the thing is, you have to have blonde hair, and at that time, well, I had been playing those the Indians and the slaves with my dark hair and dark eyes. So I said, okay, will do. And you have to be 15. I said, okay, I can do that. So I called, Mom, help me. What do I do? So my sweet mother, who is living not too far from Hollywood, met me at the sorority with a can of streaks and tips. Now, you may not know about this, Steve, but this is the stuff that you put on in the 60s that instantly changed the color of your hair. So my, all of a sudden, like in 5-10 minutes, my hair went from dark brown to blonde. Brassy blonde, but blonde. Really brassy. I mean, if you knocked on it, it would be like a helmet. So I said, Mom, what will I wear? And so I wore this very plain maroon skirt and a classic maroon sweater. So we're on our way, struggling through the traffic. And we get over to Desilu. I go up there. I'm talking to Ed Hartman, who was the producer and creator of this. And we're having a nice chat. And then he said, what's the matter with your hair? I said, my hair? And he said, yes. He says, it's turning green. I said, oh, how funny. Must be the light or something like that. But it made us laugh even more. So I get back and they said, well, they want you to do a screen test. Go to Max Factor, where I just was. That's now the Hollywood Museum. But at that time, it was Max Factor. I got this long blonde wig, and wardrobe gave me this blue and white check dress. I looked like Alice in Wonderland. I said, are you sure? And they said, yes, yes. So they're now already shooting the show. I come in my wardrobe and hair. I talk to the director, and so that was fine. Then the next day, Hazel called me up, and she says, Kathy, you got the part. She says, but there's a caveat. And I says, what? What? She says, you're fine. They just never want you to wear that dress again or that wig. I said, you got it. And that is how I got the part.
Now, if we could turn a bit to education, since this is Education Matters, as you pointed out as well. What was it like getting your earlier education, I'll call grade school, middle school, high school, when you were on the set of not only movies, but TV?
Well, I started out at Transfiguration, which was a Catholic school, and my mother was somewhat protected of me, and that was when I started to do like the Ten Commandments. And so she says, now don't tell people that you're, you know, going to do a big movie or anything like that. It's just that you're out. And I said, okay. And I was schooled on the set, on whatever set I was, whether it was a movie set or a television set. And we called them welfare workers instead of teachers, because they were also supposed to look after our welfare. But they were there, and we would bring from our school what we needed to do and our assignments. And so we had a tutor, and you had to have 3 hours a day of schooling. But that wasn't all in one big 3 hour segment.
Sure.
You could do 20 minutes. You had to do 20 minutes for it to count. So there's the associate producer tapping his foot and waiting at 18 minutes. Was she done yet? She done yet? 19 minutes. She done? 20. Okay, come on, come on, come on. So, but that was the education, but it was good, because we were tutored and we did have our assignments, and we were able to go back to school and keep up with all the other kids. There were some kids that went to Hollywood High, and perhaps they were a little bit more generous with the time gone. But my schools, I have two brothers and a sister, and we all went to Catholic school until the sixth grade. And then my mother took us all out and put us in junior high school so we could get reality. But I've always had a good education. I believe in education. I actually taught for 20 years, 25 years, voiceover and speech. in San Francisco. And I always, always emphasize to my students that, and especially not only is it good to speak correctly so people can understand you, but to hone all of their skills in the different fields. So to for speech and for voiceover, so you would know how to do animation, how to create characters, for audiobooks, that there is a certain style and certain skills that you need to develop and learn. And I have always encouraged the younger students to go to college, because acting to me, and you asked before, how has acting changed from, you know, like 1955 to 2022? We now, actors are producers. We can create our own projects. We don't have to wait for an agent or a producer, a casting professional to say, oh, okay, you're in, because there's some downtime. And if there's downtime, it's good to create your own things.
Sure. I want to read another passage, very brief. It's from chapter 17 of your book, Philosophy of the Threads. And by the way, I like how you thread your way through with this book. And by the way, for our listeners, I'm talking with Kathy Garber, who played Sissy on Family Affair. And her book, which came out in 2016 or 17, I believe?
Yeah,
15. My Family Affair of Life in Hollywood. But you say, I never wanted to be a star. I wanted to be a working actress. I fulfilled that goal with nary a break. Stardom, I had seen, could rob you of your privacy, your soul, and sometimes even your life at an early age. You know, that really, I mean, your entire book is incredible, but that particular chapter, those passages that I just read, jumped out at me in terms of you never wanted to be a star, you wanted to be a working actress, but then you immediately tied it in to how it impacts the lives of those actors, regardless of their age, how it impacts their life. Maybe if you could expound a bit on what I just read.
Well, it's true. Although I would have changed that now. This self, looking back at my younger self, I said, you should have put up your goal is to be a star, which now I've changed my goal. And it's okay, because I have my family and I'm older now. And it's okay to be a star. It's an abundant universe. And there's enough room for abundance and stardom for us all. At that time, and looking at so many of my peers and my friends who had been devastated in many ways from having been a child actor star, a child star per se, and that was, as I said, one of my books was Ex-Child Stars, and where are they now and what happened to them. And in my own personal experience, I like Anissa Jones, who was this bright, light, wonderful child and very talented. And
right, and she played Buffy.
She played Buffy on Family Affair. And they kept her very young. And she started the series when she was 8 years old. And 5 years later, when we're still doing original shows, she's 13 and she's still wearing pigtails and a little short skirt and carrying around her Mrs. Beasley. That had a very big impact on her own personality and growing up, and what, you know, her struggle to find her identity and to kind of divorce herself from Family Affair and just find out who she was. Same thing with Johnny Whitaker. In a different type of thing. Now, Anissa had a divorced mom, and she was kind of a stage mother. And Johnny came from a family of like eight, and we had seven siblings, and he became kind of the breadwinner. Well, his parents were working. His father was a teacher, and his mother was with him on the set. But he tithed for all his brothers and sisters in the church. And so when he became 18 and he was to get his money, he just got not as much money as he wanted. And then unfortunately he got on drugs and alcohol and lost all his money. And his family did an intervention and said, if you don't get off drugs and alcohol, we are going to divorce you as a family. So that kind of, you know, you hit the bottom and then, you know, there's, you need to come up in some way. So that worked for him. But, you know, even now it is tough for these child stars and teenage stars on social media. And that's even more impactful because it's for so many people and they see them right away and who are they and what's their identity. So once they're off the series and they're not in the highlighted in the press, or they don't have all the attention and they're not getting a job because they're not cute and sweet anymore, they're kind of an awkward teen, or the awkward teen is, you know, not getting the roles. So anyway, that's a long, you asked to expound. Yes, I expounded on it, but and thank goodness I had a wonderful family. And so that's, I could look back and say, yeah, I should have said, okay, it's okay if I'm a star, because I had my family to fall back on and the support of lots of people.
How do you find people react when they meet you? I mean, you and I have been chatting for a couple of weeks. We have a lot of common friends, if you will, Paul Peterson, and we mentioned Tony Dow, you know, and others. But people meet you. Obviously, the series started back in 1966. But when they meet you today, and obviously they know who you are, how do they relate to you, and what kind of vibes do you get back from them?
Well, a couple things. You know, they say, oh, you haven't changed a bit. I said, whoa. But maybe a couple more wrinkles here and there. And but I think what they're referring to is probably I have the same energy that I had when I was younger. And I think that's just my personality. I happen to have a lot of energy. I was born that way. And I think that they react to that. And there was a lot of me in my character. There was a lot of Kathy Garber that was put into Sissy. Some of the things I would talk to the directors and producers about, making her a little bit more hip. And they had a couple episodes when she, well, I'll try out, you know, in this hippie type of generation, get my own apartment. But those things didn't quite work and always went back to the family. And that again is I've been married for 42 years. and my family is still important to me.
Sure. Speaking of your family, speak a bit about your family, if you could.
Well, I was working so much, and then I was going to school, and I was doing this and that, and then all of a sudden, I'm in my 30s, and I'm not married. Why is everybody else married? I'm not married. So I put it into my head. I went down to Palm Springs. I was getting a condo there, and my friend Arlene Galanca was there also. She was there with her friend Tom, and Arlene was on Mayberry RFD and some other things. She says, we're going to play tennis and we need a fourth. And I said, oh, okay. I was playing tennis. So I meet the two of them there, and I put into my head, okay, the next man I meet, I'm going to marry. So onto the court comes this galumping 6'3" guy, and we start playing, and I I hit a serve, and he says, oh, finally, a woman that can play tennis. I'm going to get married. And I'm going, tee-hee. And so 3 years later, we got married, and as I say, we've been married 42 years.
Tell us about your son and what he is doing, and guess, you know, what is that like for him to know, obviously, that his mom was Sissy. I mean, it's still on TV, probably hasn't been off at all over the years, especially with all the streaming channels.
Yeah, it's still on Amazon and MeTV. And, well, having my child was almost the same kind of thing as getting married. When I was 40, I'm thinking, tick, 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 where's my son? I said, David, we have to get on this. Now, he had a son from a previous marriage. He was married for about 2 minutes. And that was it when he was like 21. So I have a 54-year-old stepson who is 6'7". Yes. So when I was 40, I said, David, I need to have my baby. So I got pregnant at 45 and had this absolutely perfect, beautiful child. He's just a dear. His name is Reed. Now, you know how most kids will leave the nest? My son never left the nest except for about 3 months when he went up to Sonoma College. And he invited another bird in to live in the nest. So now he and his girlfriend have been living here for 10 years with me and my husband. So he's very entrepreneurial. And everyone in my family, my two brothers and sisters, we all have college degrees from universities, whatever. He didn't want to, but he went to a community college that was like 8 minutes away from our house. Not that I wanted to keep him so close, but I was grateful for that. But he has a very business-oriented look, and he's very smart. He's read all these books. So he and his girlfriend started a dog business, VIP Pooch, and they make toys, and they dog sit and house it and dog train. And we have dogs all over the house sometimes, but and they're very successful and happy, and they love each other very much. And so they're fine. They're fine. I like them a lot.
Good. What kind of projects are you working on now? I mean, here you are, you know, we're talking about films from 1955, talking about Family Affair starting in 1966. What are you working on now?
Well, after I finish this, I have a Zoom meeting with my partner, with the president of a network, and we have a pilot that we have done called TV Dinners. And so he's very interested in putting this on his network. And so we're going to talk to him about that. I am halfway through a book on TV Dinners. And so that's coming together. This fall, I have two new movies that are coming out called, one is Old Man Jackson. I'm going at the end of the month to finish up a couple scenes, and then it will almost be done. So I think October, it's going to come out. I did another movie called Yellowbird, and that will be out in the fall. And for next year, the ones I'm working on, I was just cast in this movie called Cancel This Movie, which is, it's very funny. It's very farcical. And I play Darcy Carrington, this very liberal person that is scared of COVID, and she wears a mask and a shield, and she's an actress, and but then she wears all this makeup in the movie, and it's this billionaire is building a volcano for his movies. He's spending $100 million on this movie, but $90 million of it goes to build a volcano. Wow. in Kansas. But that's kind, and it's called, his movie is called Popcorn Lava. So, but that's a Pirandello, the movie within a movie. And then I'm doing A Mother's Wish, which is a Christmas movie, which is a very, very nice movie. I like that one. We're supposed to start that in November. And then I'm also doing a movie called The Broken Road that we will start next year. And that's about a fellow with PTSD, and I own a ranch, and my daughter meets this fellow. And so it's a romance between them and how they're going down the broken road and how they can fix it. I'm also in another farce, and this one is called The Chaperone Kid Rides Again. And I play the narrator as well as the saloon keep in this one, a la Amanda Blake, in Gunsmoke. But she's a really tough little thing, and she can fight with these bear claws. It's very much a farce, very much reminiscent of Blazing Saddles. And we're also, now this Yellowbird movie that is just coming out, we also have it as a series. And so we are pitching that to ABC. We have a meeting with them. And then we have this really interesting movie that was written for Ed Asner. And the producer had worked with Ed on two previous movies that he had done. And unfortunately, Ed died. But there was this wonderful, family-friendly, great movie. And it would be wonderful if you would help that along with us, Steve, because I know what a good producer you are, and your whole thoughtfulness and how you analyze things is really a talent.
And the name of that is?
Don Westwood.
You know, one of the other things that you and I have talked about is your stage reading of the Truman Capote A Christmas Memory. And I'm hopeful that we can get you out here to Wisconsin, to southeastern Wisconsin, soon for that. But when you're on stage in whatever setting it might be, and you're doing a reading like that.
I also listened to Truman Capote's actual reading.
Oh, yes.
Of it. And, you know, it was done with Patricia Neal and also Patty Duke did it and was Emmy nominated for it. And so I feel that closeness with Patty because, you know, I knew her so well.
Sure.
When I've done it before, we've taken the pictures from the beautifully illustrated book by Beth Peck, I think is her name.
Her illustrations in that book are absolutely incredible.
Aren't they? Aren't they just beautiful?
They are.
And I talked to the producer that helped put the PowerPoint together, and I asked, well, can I take that to different places? And they said, yes, we're just going to have it automatic, as I had done the reading before, like up in Idlewild, and they said, we're going to time it to that. So it'll be all smooth and all done with her illustrations. Isn't that interesting that she lives in Wisconsin? I tell you, it's all about electricity. And God, you know, God is not a coincidence, anonymous coincidence.
But, you know, in wrapping things up, Kathy, let me ask you this. Going back, you know, if you want to slide back into the Ten Commandments or doing some voiceover work for Apollo 13, which was an incredible movie, when you look at the width and breadth of your career, and if you were interviewing yourself, what question would you ask and how would you respond with regards to how you look at your entire career?
Well, it's almost like I said before, this is looking back at your career. And it was interesting because as I was doing it, I didn't even think about it. But then I thought, oh my gosh, I really have done a lot of things. And I think what I see now is living moment to moment, not looking back and, you know, looking forward a little bit, but what is there right now? You and I right now, you know, and me talking to these people in that are listening. That is an important and an exciting experience, because those things you're never going to replace.
And, you know, at the beginning, you made the tie-in to this program when you said education absolutely matters. As you look at your own education, formal and informal, why has all that mattered to you?
I am so grateful. And I'm having a high school reunion next year. And I'm not even going to tell you how many years ago, but quite, it's a big one. And I look back and there were two teachers especially. And I said, they were so good. I learned so much from them. I went to UCLA. I went back to finish at UCLA. And then I got a master's degree in theater arts. And I went to the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art and studied there. But what it blessed me with, too, was the ability to talk to anybody. I mean, I have a breadth of knowledge and a liberal arts kind of schooling that covered so many different areas, sociology and anthropology and psychology and theater and science. I love science. So those things have served me well all through my life in doing interviews. Who knew there were going to be podcasts? Mm-hmm. Who knew that they were going to have all of these things? And I feel that I'm very proud that every time I do an interview and I say, this is going to be the best interview I've ever done, to let people know, to inspire perhaps people to say, you know, get as much education as you can. Even if it's, you know, a community college, which is good, which is my son. And I took him to traveled and he had lots of different experiences that he condensed. Everything you do is an experience and a learning experience. So we can be educated every single day.
Kathy Garber, I want to thank you so much for being my guest and being part of all of our lives for so many years. Thank you so much for being on Education Matters.
Thank you. And if anybody would like a book, they can go to my website, which is kathygarber.com, KathyGarver.com. You can like me on Facebook. You can like me on Instagram, and I'll like you right back.
I would like to once again thank Kathy Garber for joining me here on Education Matters this morning. And as she noted, you can go to her website, KathyGarber.com, for more information. For Education Matters here on WGTD-HD, I'm your host this morning, Steve Brown. Thank you so much for listening.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard Saturday mornings at 10:30 here on WGTD. Archive programs are available on our website at WGTD.org.
Hello, I'm Orson Welles. We know a farm in western Kenosha County where Mrs. Buckley lives. In July, peas grow there. Do you really mean that? I don't understand. We aren't even in the fields yet, you see.
Yes, we are, Mr. Welles.
We are talking about them growing, and she's already picked them, and we have a big bowl of hot peas with warm Wisconsin butter drizzled all over them. That is what we have.
Yes, Mr. Welles, in July, where fields are covered with snow, and Mr. Welles, we need you to emphasize the word in.
Why? That doesn't make any sense. I have never heard anyone who would emphasize the word in. There is no known way in the English language where you begin a sentence with the word in and then emphasize it.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Yes, always. I am already past that. In fact, give me a jury and show me how you can say in July, and I will sing a song for you. This is absolutely idiotic, stupid, impossible, meaningless. I'd love to know just how you would emphasize in July.
Then let's change that to every July.
You don't really mean every July, do you? Who said that?
I did.
Who the heck are you? What? Now I have two directors telling me how to read in July? That's bad copy. Of course it's every July.
We should move on to the next commercial.
Oh, this is crazy. You don't know what I am up against. This is quite weary. Enough of this for now.